The utter state of freedom, if you examine the state of true freedom, you will find the experience of delight. Wherever there is some kind of pain, suffering, it means that there is some compulsion on you, which you are resisting, which is opposing your will. But if there is no compulsion whatsoever, where there is a real absence of compulsion, and absence of compulsion means a real freedom, there is no compulsion at all of any kind whatsoever, that state will automatically be a state of delight. Because all pain comes out of compulsion. If you examine any pain in the experience of the world, it is a result of compulsion. When there is a compulsion, you feel pain. But where there is no compulsion, it is all delight. You feel happy to look after the child, because there is no compulsion that you must look after the child. You are really freely looking after the child. It is the very well you are pouring out of your heart, and there is no compulsion from anywhere. When a poet writes his poem, he could remain without writing. He could also equally write. There is no compulsion that he must write. And yet he writes. It's a
all art is nothing but creativity. And all art is fundamentally a domain of joy. Where there is no joy, there can be no art. Even when the poet sings out of sorrow, there is some kind of inner joy which bursts out in the poem of the poet. Sweetest are the uses of adversity. This is how the poet looks upon even the sorrowful song that he sings. In all creativity there is this freedom, and where there is freedom there is this burst of joy. It is in that sense that you may say that artist is the companion of God, because in his activity he comes closest to God. Just as God is utterly free, not compelled, similarly artist is not compelled to express. And yet he expresses. By expressing he doesn't become a better artist. He doesn't add something to himself. So whether he expresses or he does not express, he remains equal. Purna madaha purna midam. That is perfect and this is perfect. If you add something to perfect, it is perfect. If he writes a poem, it is added something to his expression. But basically nothing is added to him, because it was already there in him. The poem was already in him. He only brings it out. If you take out what is expressed, then also perfect remains. Purnat purna mudachyate, purnasya purna madaya, purnameva vashishyate. If you add to perfect, it is perfect. If you take out from the perfect, it is perfect. That is why the Purna, the pure existence which is Purna, which is perfect, pure existence means nothing more is needed, is everywhere existence. So, with regard to the activity of the perfect, you can only describe it as a creativity of joy and delight. That is why very often the world is called creation. The world is not added to the divine. It is not something which adds to the concreteness of the divine. If the divine, the whole world is taken out, divine doesn't become less divine. Therefore, it is a creative joy, creative manifestation. In any case, the moment you grant two premises, that God is pure existence and God is conscious being, then the only answer you can give with regard to the movement of the world is that this world is a manifestation or creation of God's perfection without any compulsion, in complete freedom, and therefore it is an expression of delight. So God being pure existence and conscious being, the manifestation of the world necessarily proves that His very nature must be delight. So logically now you establish that God must be at once pure existence, must be pure conscious being, and He must be delight. And this very statement, which is logically we have done so far, first of all we showed logically how pure existence is the only thing that can be conceived. Secondly, we logically saw that that pure conscious must be conscious being. Now we establish that He must be a delight. This very thing is also experienced. The reality is experienced. Anybody who has realized God, he confirms that He is Satchidananda. This is what the Vedas, the rishis who experienced God, they have described God as Satchidananda. Not in exact three terms. This formulation Satchidananda came in the Upanishads. In the Veda there is no word like Satchidananda. There are three words in the Veda. The reality is Vasu. Vasu means that which when you eat you can satisfy yourself. That is called Vasu. If it was non-existent, you cannot eat. Therefore you could not satisfy yourself. So in the image of the Veda, to see puris and vegetables, for example, is a perception of Vasu. Is a reality, is a prosperity, is a real being. That is the Vedic imagery. Vedic imagery is ratnam, dhanam, dravyam, annam. These are the words used in the Veda to describe the pure existence. The reality is described in many ways. It is described as ekam sat. Ekam sat vipra bahudha vadanti. That is also Vedic expression. Tad ekam. That one, that is another expression of the Veda. Then Vasu is another term which is used. Ratnam, ratnadhatamam, that is in the very first verse of Rig Veda, Agni mire purohitam yajyasya deva matvijam hotaram ratnadhatamam. So ratna is also another word which describes the pure existence. It is a reality. It's not a fluff. In other words, it is something which if you undertake to put into your being, it fills you. It is existence, so that is why it fills you.
Vasu is from the same root?
Same, absolutely. Precisely. Vasudha is also from the same root. So, Vasu is another word. Then another word is urja. Urja is the energy. Conscious energy. It is urja. And the Veda speaks of priyam. The reality is priyam. It is full of delight. Madhu is another word also which is used. Mayas is another word which is used for reality. All of them means delight. So these three concepts, reality as existence, conscious force, and as delight, these were found by the Vedic rishis who tasted God and described God. having seen God, having touched Him, having tasted Him, they all declare He is Vasu, He is Urja, He is Priya.